TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. From COVID-19, the Ukraine conflict, the persecution of Julian Assange, corrupt government, the WEF, digital IDs and digital currency, the Great Reset, the disassembling of the West, and the destruction of the world as we once knew it. Your opinion matters. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Anything worth saying is worth talking about. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's news talk radio, TNT.
Greetings, truth seekers, paradigm busters, new world order, civil disobedience, freedom fighters, free thinkers, higher mammals, good people of all types. How's it going? Michael Parker here, reporting for duty, highly caffeinated, as usual, from my undisclosed location, somewhere in Los Angeles, California. And ladies and gentlemen, it is a Friday for those of us here in the U.S., in the Northern Hemisphere. It is Saturday morning for our team over there in Australia. And wherever you are, I hope you're having a good day, evening, whatever it is. Thank you for listening. We are approaching Christmas. I'm looking forward to it. And December is always wacky. And this week has been extremely wacky. We started out with talks of camel viruses and catastrophic contagions. We're ending the week with Elon Musk getting rid of journalists off of Twitter, which kind of makes me laugh, I've got to be honest. We will be discussing that later today. But we'll be talking about other things. I mean, Trump comes out with an NFT, a non-fungible ticket, whatever the hell they call those things, NFTs. People have had really widely differing views on what kind of decision that was, but we'll be talking about that too. But I do, before we go further, I want to talk about this thing that was mentioned in the segment right before me in regards to illegal immigration. What I'm noticing now is all of a sudden, out of the blue, the left is recognizing the fact that we have immigration problems and that we have out of control homelessness in the major urban cities within the United States. It's like, where have you guys been for the last 2-3 years? And the gentleman that was speaking, I believe he was the mayor of El Paso. I didn't catch what his actual title was, but he's someone from El Paso. He was invoking us needing to get help from the UN. And I was like, maybe that's what this is all about. Maybe that's why we're finally going to recognize it, because we're going to invoke international help. So I hope that's just my intuition going too far. But it sounds like that's what that guy is promoting, and maybe that's what they're putting the feelers out for, and maybe that is the ulterior motive for why the Democrats and the left are finally recognizing these long-standing, completely out-of-hand issues. On a lighter note, speaking of Democrats, with all the craziness that has happened this week, did you hear about AOC's new documentary? AOC's new documentary is DOA. It is dead on arrival, baby. And this thing, AOC had this documentary that started in theaters several days ago called To the End. And it's about climate change. It was produced by a company called Roadside Attractions. It was released in 120 theaters nationwide, and it brought in less than $10,000. So that means that, like, it was making about $80 per theater. This is beyond a bomb. This is an incredible embarrassment. However, maybe that wasn't the intention anyway. Maybe they didn't even care how much money it made at box office, because what they actually intend to do is try to get her an Academy Award, which seems absolutely crazy, I know. But I was reading various people's thoughts on this, and nobody went to go see it. Some of the critics were trying to say good things about it because that's their job and they're most likely on the left and believe in all of this. But somebody pointed out, I'm trying to find this individual's name, they said they only stuck it in a few screens so they could fulfill the rules the Academy requires so they can give AOC an Oscar. And I was like, that actually sounds reasonable, because they're trying to make her out to be this heroine of the 21st century and someone that you're all going to, look to as a hero. But historically, Any documentaries about climate change have not been successful. Al Gore had his, which is, you know, An Inconvenient Truth. That was probably the most successful one. But since then, they've pretty much all bombed. Earlier this year, there was one by Nat Geo, which was called The Territory. It earned less than $70,000. So AOC's little climate catastrophe film is not faring well, but maybe they knew that that would probably be the case, and maybe they just want to give her an award and put her on the red carpet. It sounds crazy, but image is everything when you stand for nothing. If you missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit the episodes on the TNT radio website. We are also on all of the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. There is no reason to miss out on anything here on TNT Radio.
News as it happens.
It's around the clock update.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
While people are reluctant to get their boosters, others are worried about getting any shot at all, and perhaps for good reason. Here to discuss declining boosters and wrong shots being injected is TNT News producer John Madlin.
I'm not going to jump into it yet. I have to put a tack in it because I actually almost spit my coffee out all over my computer, Michael, when you talked about AOC's dismal ratings and how much money she brought in. So I want to, for the fun of it, I want to hit everybody with another crazy fact that we can apply also to this AOC bombing. This is the real truth. Donald Trump sold out 45,000 NFTs in 12 hours at $99 a pop, which brings in $4,455,000. And I just wanted to bring that up because how much did you say AOC's film made?
It made like $180,000. No, bear with me just a second. Let me pull up my note again. It was terrible. It was like $80 per, less than $10,000 gross, $80 per theater in 120 plus theaters. Terrible.
It's honestly, it's impressive numbers if you're looking at the bottom of the toilet bowl.
Right?
But you're totally right when you said that they're trying to give her an award. That is such, whether it's just the theory, it's if all of the theaters made up the ability to have her qualify for that award, give Michael Parker an award right now because he's spot on. That woman will be in a dress that says, eat the rich next, and she will be there.
And I'll be honest, she is an attractive woman, but I wish that I could claim credit for this prognostication. Some critics said that, and when they said it, I was like, wow, that is it. That's how shallow these people are. They just want to give her an award.
Yeah, and because after that, she will be brought up as the possible next presidential nominee. We all know where that award would go. But it does force me to remind everybody that in 1989, the United Nations had said that the lower part of Manhattan would be completely submerged in water by the year 2000. And it looks the exact same way today. So, I mean,
imagine
imagine that. There's truth and then there's fiction. And really, right now, there's so many people living in this fantasy land. The world was supposed to be flooded time and time again from the glaciers melting. And somehow, some way, Michael, everything is status quo. So they've changed it from global warming to climate change. We've watched this, and the indoctrination, they're putting that firebrand that the left loves so much, AOC, right in the front. And she's currently getting investigated for wrongdoing and ethics right now. And, you know, it what's crazy about that, I know we've deviated so much already, but it's Friday. Let the good times roll. The truth is they had that investigation underway before her election. They paused it because there's a statute that you can pause it for elections. So the people, her own constituents, couldn't even know that she was being investigated. Her opponent, Tina Forte, didn't know she was getting investigated. And then at the tail end of it, if it eclipses the 45-day limit and they extend the investigation, then it has to be made public. And we're not going to know about it until January. So it's just, it's really bizarre how this all works. And you, and people that believe and trust the government at this point with all the information that's coming out about the JFK assassination and whatnot, like, you know, it, they can tell us whatever tales they want right now. If you believe them, you're hook, line, sinker, you're along for the ride. Let me know how that fiction ends, because I'm going to live in real world
for
foreseeable future. But let's jump into our topic.
Shall we? Yes.
Yeah. The number of folks willing to take a booster is dwindling, and it seems like many Americans want off the big pharma subscription plan. They can't maybe handle their SiriusXM satellite or anything. I don't know, but they want off the pharma plan. So according to the Kaiser Family Foundation COVID-19 vaccine monitor poll, only 39% of U.S. adults 65 and older decided to get the new bivalent booster. Though 16% of respondents did indicate that they think they might get it at some point, that's a pretty big drop, because we're seeing people starting to wake up and say, okay, enough is enough. And most of these people who already have had three or four shots probably just see the writing on the wall after they ended up getting COVID too, and the science keeps coming out that's making this worse. So the belief cited is they don't think the benefit of the updated shots are worth it, and they don't think they need it. Something interesting to note, the poll uncovered a new growing trend of opposition to regular vaccines for school children. So Big Pharma is facing a new surge of opposition since forcing many people to start paying attention and reassess the situation and landscape. Well, what are so many people worried about? Well, for one, it's tainted shots or mistakes at vaccination sites. A story has emerged of a member of the National Guard named Matthew Bouchard being injected with a COVID-19 vaccine instead of the flu shot he was online to get back in 2021. So he had not taken the COVID jab, and he was not planning to. He was going through the motions of acquiring a religious exemption. And again, that happened in 2021. He was told a day later in the commander's office that he had been given the wrong shot. They said this was the first time it had happened. I mean, I have some ideas about that not being true, but that's an opinion. And they don't know how it happened. You know, he wants to blow the whistle. This experience shouldn't be swept under the rug. He wants people to know that it happened. And it's a growing concern for many people that a simple mistake could mean getting the wrong shot. And that isn't sitting well with people that have objections to this new technology, religious objections as well. And, you know, we don't know exactly what is getting injected unless you're watching from soup to nuts. And what I mean by that is you have to assume that what happened when they were bottling it was on the up and up as well. But if you're not seeing the vial and watching it from it getting drawn up to being injected, you got to have some questions, right? So sudden deaths are plaguing the media and occurring in public under the public eye at an unprecedented rate. And, you know, I'm asking you now, Michael, would you feel okay just walking into a pharmacy and trusting what they're injecting into your arm if you were online to get a flu shot at this point?
No. That's what I have a doctor for. It's like, I mean, at this point, I absolutely am not going to go into a CVS or a Rite Aid or a Walgreens or something and let somebody who's making $12 an hour give me a shot. Maybe they make a little bit more money than that, but no, I want any shot that I take from here on out to be from a qualified medical professional and most likely from my own doctor.
Yeah, so that's the thing. The people that are giving these shots at the pharmacy, as long as they're pharmacists that are trained to do this and draw it up and everything, I mean, that is by all means what you need. The only thing is there's so many moving parts there. And for example, if you work at a hospital and you're doing surgery, they'll do a thing called a timeout. They say the patient's name, date of birth, they read out everything, and they'll read out the number before they inject it off the bottle to log it in. And people go, well, they do all that for a surgery. Well, that even moved its way into x-ray before I left because they were scared of people getting the wrong CAT scan. Now, when you dispense radiation, it is informed. It has to be by prescription. So if you're giving the wrong radiation, the wrong amount to the wrong body part, that is a problem. It's a reportable offense and whatnot. So yeah, if you're in a CVS, they're not calling out your name. They're not doing a timeout. There's not multiple people doing a check. And for one, I really, really urge anyone going to these places to ask to see the vial as it's being drawn up to make sure these mistakes can happen. And trust me, in the medical field, if you start looking into it, They've done wrong side operations on brains, replaced wrong hips, wrong knees, yes. And that's with timeouts. That's with a surgeon that knows the patient. And that's absurd, but it does happen. And that's called medical malpractice. And if yes. you think that going to CVS is going to protect you, it's not. You better be sure to watch what's going on.
And unfortunately, I mean, we shouldn't even be having to talk about all of this. All of this should have been more well thought out. And I do know people who've asked for the batch number of the injection, and I applaud that. And I mean, this whole thing, it has gone so far off the crazy train. And then you mentioned that this National Guard serviceman was given the wrong injection. I mean, oh my God, if that had been administered in a hospital by a doctor, you could sue for malpractice. I don't know what you can do if you're in the service. I don't know what he has to lean upon to try to get justice for that.
Yeah. And, you know, you could talk about lawsuits trying to help the situation, but at the end of the day, you can't take back in money what you've put into your body. So, you know, people like you can't offer me any amount of money to take that shot. Clearly, I'd let them take my whole entire career from me. So this is something that's a non-bargaining piece. But what we are going to talk about in the next hour, of course, I do want to give you those updates of Twitter. But right now, the rumor is that any minute it could be the Fauci drop. So I'll be watching this in real time as I'm formulating the story. So, you know, Friday seems to be Elon's day when he likes to do these big releases, but he's hinting at something major coming that he referred to as the death blow. But we'll get into that when we talk in the next hour.
I cannot wait. I mean, I hope it comes out today. And I think you're right. I had actually not even thought of that. But John Matlin, I think you're right. That probably is coming today.
I hope so. Let's fingers cross that one.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this is TNT's Deprogram, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by my first-time guest, Helen of Destroy. What a great name. Helen Byniski, Helen of Destroy. We'll see you in a minute.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
Dr. Dixon has stated that it was never possible that we know that the COVID-19 injectables are safe in pregnancy, let alone effective. And he, for one, always discouraged any pregnant patients not to have this medication. Dr. Dixon was constantly, as were others, bombarded with the message from every official organisation that because COVID was such a threat during pregnancy, that vaccination was a must. So, David, what did you do about this?
There was quite a prominent poster at med school when I was there which said, for every mistake made for not doing, 10 made for not looking. So I decided to purchase a microscope and start having a look, both at the vaccine but also at blood. But most recently I've been focusing on the vaccine because I have been finding some interesting abnormalities in the vaccine that clearly shouldn't be there. And some of the inclusions that are structures that I find in the vaccine are the same or very similar in appearance to what we're seeing in the blood, so that the two seem to be related.
Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
What's your name?
I'll let you in on a little secret.
Oh, come on, guys. You must tell us.
This is today's News Talk and the voice of freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty then. For the remainder of this hour, I'm joined by Helen Byniski. She is a clever wordsmith. She goes by Helen of Destroy, and on Twitter it is Velociraptor23. I love this. A journalist, a commentator based in New York City, her work has appeared on RT, Press TV, Global Research, Progressive Radio Network, New Dawn, Zero Hedge, many others. You can find her work at helenofdestroy.substack.com, and I have a feeling we have a lot in common. She talks a lot about propaganda, psychology of power and control, social media, totalitarianism, essentially the 21st century. Helen, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for coming on. I've been going through your Twitter feed as well, and you've got a sharp wit. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is, because, I mean, we're all talking about Elon today and the doxing and the journalists and everything. And you had pointed out something that, you know, we do need to be a little bit skeptical of Mr. Musk. I don't entirely trust the guy. I'll take the wins here and there. But give me your thought on the current state of Twitter and Mr. Musk and the things that have transpired in the last 24 hours.
Well, I'm assuming by the last 24 hours, you mean that he banned a bunch of these establishment journalists who like to dox people and in general who have developed this new mode of journalism that mostly consists of digging up things that they disagree about politically and then exposing their home addresses and stuff. So I think that it was not really in the best taste by Musk. I would love to see Elon Musk be the savior that everyone seems to think that he is. Obviously, he's better than like a Mark Zuckerberg type figure who just makes you want to throw up upon looking at him. But that doesn't mean that he's going to be all above board and that a military contractor who wants to put nanotubules in your head should really be in charge of a social network that he's actually said he wants to make more like WeChat and China's sort of, I think the closest comparison would be the known traveler digital identity that the World Economic Forum devised in 2018, which is sort of a health passport / bank card / ID, biometric ID, vaccine passport. Basically, everything that you can put on one account is that. And Elon Musk wants Twitter to be that. So that in itself terrifies me. And that he's deplatforming these reporters, I mean, it is, I can see why he was tempted to do it, because these people are just so like smug and loathsome that it really must have been satisfying to give them the boot, but it doesn't look good for him. And he's made a bunch of moves recently in this release of these Twitter files that I think are just really, really bad on all layers, like the use of Barry Weiss, for example, as anything. Like this is a woman who weaponizes her ethnicity to claim that anybody who criticizes the government of Israel is somehow an anti-Semite, and who thinks that certain governments who criticize Israel should not be allowed on Twitter. And having her in charge of even just unwrapping these Twitter messages that. Now, I don't think that these were all even available to the public. Like we're supposed to trust that she and Matt Taibbi have just brought out all the ones that are the best ones to look at and have drawn the correct conclusions about them. I don't think that this is how we should be going about reporting this a new story that could theoretically change the course of American history. I mean, the fact that Big Brother and Big Deck have been colluding behind the scenes to do an end run around the First Amendment and basically install corporate fascism. While everybody kind of knew what was going on, the evidence wasn't there until now. And now that there is so much evidence and so blatant and so like, I mean, this is really a big deal. And so the fact that Elon has put somebody like Barry Weiss in charge is like, dude, you're really fumbling the ball on this one. So, I mean, I would like to see this go where it should go. But I think that Musk is, I mean, there are too many red flags there. And he's making mistakes that seem like they are designed to create stricter regulation, larger controls on speech, and as I said, more intrusions into privacy and more just consolidation of this tech presence in our lives.
And I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I really wasn't, Barry Weiss wasn't even really on my radar until just a few weeks ago. And my wife had Bill Maher on, who I used to enjoy Bill Maher, but I don't really ever listen to him or watch him anymore. But she was on there, and my wife enjoyed her, and so we talked about her, and I was looking at her. But saying weaponizing nationality, that's one way of putting it. That made me chuckle.
Yeah, she's definitely, I mean, and Shulamit Aloni, a former Knesset member in Israel, has said that we do it all the time. If somebody criticizes us, we just call them an anti-Semite, and then the argument over, let's say. And that's what Barry Weiss does constantly. She is so annoying about that. And she from day one when she appeared on the scene, I don't know who's I'm not even going to say what I'm thinking, but I don't know how she ended up getting the central role in the New York Times editorial board. But it's like because she didn't feel like she was getting the attention enough or something, or the leeway to write the absurd viewpoints that she felt like she was allowed to take, then she went off and did it on her own. And now she's got Elon Musk basically giving her the spotlight for what's sure to be a very lucrative Substack career.
And then today she comes out and she says that, you know, she doesn't stand by what Elon has done in the last 24 hours. And I tend to agree like you do. It's like, I don't think this is a great look for him. I don't know what is up his sleeve. And apparently these bans are for 7 days. I don't know if that applies to Oberman, who's incredibly annoying, but at least others, at least for the others, I think it's only supposed to be a 7 day ban.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Olbermann is like on the level of the Krasenstein brothers. It's like nobody, I don't think, takes him seriously anymore. He's just there to shout and shake his fist at the cloud, I don't know. But the other ones, like Taylor Lorenz, is the fact that anybody takes her seriously as a journalist says more about the dire state of journalism today than it does about Taylor Lorenz in particular, because there are like a bunch of Taylor Lorenzes. And so unfortunately, it's like if you're going to ban one Taylor Lorenz, you have to ban them all. And then you're really going to be held up as, oh, yes, Elon Musk is the biggest fascist ever. Look, he banned my favorite doxing journalist.
Yes. Yes. I'm speaking with Helen of Destroy, Helen Byniski. We've got to take a quick bottom of the hour news break. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. Stick around.
What do they want? Exciting news.
Brace yourself.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Japan declared plans to possess Prianto strike capability cruise missiles within years to give itself more offensive footing against threats from neighboring China and North Korea. India Thursday successfully test-fired a long-range Agni 5 intercontinental nuclear-capable ballistic missile. A Peruvian judge ordered ousted President Pedro Castillo to remain in custody for 18 months, approving a request from authorities for time to build their rebellion case against him.
What the hell's going on? It's Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
From our family to yours.
Happy Holidays!
TNT.
All righty, we are back, and that was a jolly little jingle there. And I am speaking with Helen of Destroy. You can find her on Twitter at Velociraptor23. She's a journalist, a commentator, and we're very pleased to have her on the show today. Before you came on, I was speaking with John Matlin. He's one of our producers and reporters here, and we were talking about just the continued insanity of this. And the Musk thing, you know, we talk about Musk a lot because right now he is really one of the biggest stories in the world with the whole Twitter thing. And it's funny because a year or two ago, Twitter, man, I was pretty much done with it. I was still on it. I was still using it, but I was sick of it. And I felt like I was definitely being throttled. Shadow banned, probably was. I don't know for sure. Didn't have a huge following, but I was pretty much done with it. And love him or hate him, the guys brought it back to relevance with all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I had never gotten even locked out of my account because I've always been very careful just with the words that I use and the people who I use those words with. And while I've gotten like warnings and stuff, I hadn't been locked out until last year when they started doing the tight crackdown on COVID, quote unquote, misinformation, which basically means anything that went outside the ever changing boundaries of what the WHO decides is reality. Yeah. So it became like a very difficult thing to even post because it's like, okay, well, like if I can't even say the sky is blue today, then it's like it's very demoralizing to try to maintain a social media presence if the ground is being pulled out from under you. So while I'm glad that Musk has allowed people like Peter McCullough and Robert Malone, even though I have my issues with Robert Malone lately, but the fact that he's allowing these COVID dissidents back on is definitely a point in his favor. But I mean, that's what we were talking about before the break. I think that he's deplatforming these psychotic attempts at journalists is like it's not looking good, and it's going to be used against those people who he does let back on. So it's basically a whole political game. He should know this by now because he's kind of like been in the halls of power for basically since he was born. I think his dad was a pretty powerful guy. Yes. So, this is something that he should know better. And this idea that he's just a kid in a candy store with this Twitter thing is, I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all.
Well, you may be right in that, and other people have thought this as well, that, you know, there's an ulterior motive here with Twitter that really perhaps this is the foundational piece of a larger strategy, which then ties into the scenario you were describing that was very close to, you know, an all-encompassing security, card, trade, debit, everything all in one.
Yeah, basically a social credit score. I mean, and Elon Musk has said that he wants something along the lines of a social credit score. I mean, again, the example he used is China's WeChat, but there is, like, the infrastructure is in place for doing such a thing. WEF was testing it out in early 2020 with I think they call it Common Pass. It was originally called the Known Traveler Digital Identity, but they've changed the name, of course, a bunch of times, like they always do, because you use the same name too many times, people tend to catch on and start realizing that, hey, wait a second, that's that dystopian thing they were talking about 10 years ago. But
well, one of the things, because I also saw a tweet you put out about the show, and I appreciate that, because you mentioned a WEF-sponsored internal babysitter. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I've a couple of my recent Substack articles have talked about how this the UN, UNESCO, has this initiative against quote-unquote disinformation, which is like, think before you tweet, or think before you post, or think before you share, whatever it is. But they basically want you to not share quote-unquote conspiracy theory content, because supposedly it's dangerous and it will incite hate, and then the world will end, and so on. But they want you to basically replace your own impulse to share an interesting post or something that you think might be true or relevant or valuable to your audience. They want you to replace that normal human instinct with the corporate state instinct, which is to sit on it and behave and obey and, in general, keep that dissident thought to yourself, because you don't want to pollute the greater resources of the common consciousness. So that's the internal thought police. That's what I was referring to there, because the WEF did have like its own paper that it put out regarding the UNESCO initiative. I don't remember the exact details of that, but they have a big crusade, basically exactly paralleling the one that the Anti-Defamation League had back in 2018 to crack down on quote unquote abuse online, which again is one of these vague words that is redefined by whoever needs to redefine it at any given moment and can mean whatever that person wants on any given day.
Do you remember, I think it was about 2 years ago, I think it was November 2nd, which is my brother's birthday, but on the cover of Time magazine, and this is when I would talk to people, you know, oh, the Great Reset, that's a wild conspiracy theory. But on the cover of Time magazine, and I believe it was 2 years ago, it was the Great Reset, and one of the major articles that was in it was penned by Klaus. Do you remember this?
I remember he put out the book in, I think, May 2020. So it's been around for a while. And the fact that people were still calling it a conspiracy theory is, again, just proof that they can tell you the sky is orange and there's nothing you can do about it, because they control the information output mechanisms. And if they start getting into in your head with these instinct swaps, like, which is what I call them, but then it's really all over, because if you can't trust your own reactions to external stimuli, then you got a problem.
Right. And it was just interesting to me that they would put this on the cover of Time magazine. You know, they've got a globe with some scaffolding around it, I believe, if I remember the image correctly. But they're basically telling you, hey, it's here. We're devoting an entire issue to this topic. Klaus gets to write his editorial. And then a few months later, in February, I believe it was, they essentially put out another cover story, which I don't remember the title of it now, but they're kind of explaining how they had to essentially massage and work on the election. Essentially, I would admit that I would say that they were admitting tampering with the election. I just put it out there because here's Time magazine, that when I was a kid growing up, my parents had a subscription, and, you know, I thought, wow, Time magazine, that's a big deal. These days, this kind of media is really just a mouthpiece for the agenda.
Yeah, no, we had Time for Kids when I was young, and it was the same thing. It was basically training children to expect from their politics the exact kind of like meaningless pablum they're getting now. But yes, I remember that Time issue as well, the one about the election, and basically admitted exactly what had happened, but framed it in such a way that, oh, this is just what democracy is like. And democracy has always been this way. It always will be this way. And anyone who thinks otherwise is a dangerous conspiracy theorist and should probably be in jail.
Yes. I tried to show both of these issues to people and try to say, well, look, I mean, they're basically telling you what happened, and people just flagged it off. And I get that. You know, I'm not asking for anybody to say, Michael, you were right, because that's never going to happen. But it didn't. I mean, I wanted to point it out to people. And you write for a lot of media. Have you ever been told by one of the media companies that you write for, like, actually, we can't publish that particular story?
Yes, I have. I'm not going to say which ones, but
right. I understand.
I mean, there are some outlets that simply don't want to go in a particular direction, or that think that something might be too speculative. Even then, if it turns out to be exactly true a year later, then they can just say, well, we were wrong, or just usually they won't even say that. They'll just not say anything. Or if they're Washington Post, they'll go back and edit it retroactively and hope nobody notices. But I've never written for the Washington Post, so I don't know what they would do if faced with a story like that. But there's a lot of outlets are getting extremely timid about certain areas of context, because it's just it's becoming more difficult for them to get to remain on like big tech platforms if they, for example, go into too much COVID dissident stuff or too much election questioning. I mean, it's like people have been questioning elections ever since I've been voting, and the idea that now this is a form of terrorism or something, that it's dangerous to our democracy if we point out that like these voting machines are so easy to hack that like a five-year-old can do it, and that five-year-olds do it regularly at these DEF CON conferences, but now we're just not allowed to say this anymore. And this is the kind of regression that I've seen actually in the last 3 years. I'm working on an article about this right now, actually, about how in the last 3 years of the pandemic, you would think that like as people's knowledge has actually expanded and grown, we know more about what happened than we did before, that we would be able to like sort of, I don't know, hold some people responsible or express more ideas that we previously could. But instead, it's going backwards. We now can no longer question elections. We now, if we say anything about it, I think the Department of Homeland Security actually released a memo saying that it was a terrorist adjacent action to question elections. And it's like, okay, so what is, we know where all this is going. We know now that all the big tech platforms met with at least 12 US government agencies on a regular basis to decide what could and could not be censored, which names were gonna go on the blacklist for that day, which topics were on the no-no zone. And so you would think that this would result in positive moves being made in the direction of freedom. Not seeing this, and that is a big problem.
Yes, in fact, it seems like they're doubling down. I mean, you can look at it in the COVID vaccine thing. You can look at it, as you mentioned, with questioning the elections, any of that stuff. Instead of people coming around and asking more questions, it seems like the establishment is doubling down, and those who never wanted to believe it in the first place still choose not to believe it, which makes the rest of us just sit here and scratch our heads like, how could this be? But it's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, no, it's part of the general divide and conquer initiative that is one of their favorite things to do to us always. Just make sure that there's no place where both sides, quote unquote, could ever meet, because once we start exchanging notes and sharing our experiences, and we realize we have a lot more in common with each other than we do with the ruling class, then obviously it's all over for them. And so they can't allow that to happen. And it's just the fact that they've got now, like, I think the state of Massachusetts has got like a hotline where now you can call to report, quote unquote, white supremacy, which in Massachusetts means anything we don't like. And so it's like they've reached the heights of absurdity that you didn't think were possible in 2020, when in Massachusetts they had taped out aisles on the sidewalk where you had to walk on this direction on one aisle, on this direction on the other aisle, and outdoors on the sidewalk, supposedly to stop from catching COVID. So it's like, where do you even go from there? Okay, white supremacy hotline, that's pretty absurd. Oh, where do you go from there? I don't even want to know the answer to that one, because every time I make a joke now, it becomes reality, and that's really depressing.
And not only that, like when I do see what friends I have left in a social setting, I come home and I go, man, I wonder if I said anything that was, you know, disagreeable. I mean, everything is so loaded now. It's like, I hope I didn't make a joke that could have been interpreted in a way. And we've overcomplicated everything, and we're now living in this Woody Allen world of just complete neuroticism day in and day out.
Yeah, it's like, and a lot of these people who took COVID as like this personal crusade, I call it the cult of Corona. Some, I think CJ Hopkins coined the term branch Covidians, which was very clever. But the people who joined this this movement and basically made it their personal cause, it's like it's like a wild animal or a tamed wild animal, rather, that has tasted blood and now it can never be a pet again because it's just got this crazy in it now. And it's just, you don't know, you can't really trust a person who has gone from being like your normal friend, happy-go-lucky, whatever, just calm person, to the kind of person who will go into a supermarket and attack a mother with her two kids because the kids don't have masks on and God forbid somebody blows their nose. And it's just like, I mean, well, how do you even deprogram these people? Because you can't go around every single one, and they might start acting normal for a while, but then also, how do you know you're not falling into an us and them thing? And so it's like, it's all very crazy making, and this is on purpose. So I don't know what the answer is there, but there's like, if you look at Stephen Hassan, who's a cult expert, who unfortunately fell victim to the Trump derangement syndrome cult himself, but he's got this list of characteristics of dangerous fringe religious movements. And if you compare them to what COVID, basically what people did during COVID, every single one overlaps. There is not one that does not appear in the COVID devotees toolbox. So that's something.
I am speaking with Helen the Destroy, Helen Byniski. We've got to take a quick break. This is TNT's Deprogram. We'll be back in a few minutes.
They're coming after your meat by creating intentional meat shortages.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Climate envoy John Kerry is now seeking a global 30% reduction in methane emissions from farms.
So we now have 150 nations that have joined in the methane pledge, which is to have a global reduction of methane by 30% globally by 2030.
John Kerry is bragging about this, quote, climate action to curb methane from livestock. Make no mistake, this is a war on modern meat eating in an intent to get us to eat lab-grown meat and vegetable processed meat and even insects. They are intentionally going after high-yield agriculture, and they are intentionally going after animal products. Welcome to the Great Food Reset. This is Mark Morano for TNT Radio, Morano Minute.
In regional and rural areas of our great country, the sun brings a heavy toll. Skin cancer hits us hard. And if you've spent a lot of time out under the sun, your risk is high. Melanoma is the deadliest skin cancer, but it's curable if you get it early. Monthly skin checks are a must. If a spot, mole, or freckle doesn't look or feel right, don't wait. To find out more, visit melanomapatients.org.au.
Are you even listening to me?
Your kids may not be listening, but pretty much every voice-activated smart device is. Just tell it to play.
TNT Radio.
Helen Byniski, Helen of Destroy, is my guest this hour. And Helen, before, well, I was looking at your Twitter page again over the break, and I was thinking about, I started the week out talking with some people about catastrophic contagion. The week before, I had talked about all these sketchy tabletop exercises, and this gets back to the doubling down. It's like, these people, I mean, they're pretty much out in the open at this point. I think they have these without any fear of repercussions, and even though we're only hearing about it now, it happened in October, I don't think that John Hopkins and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and people like that, I don't think they even worry what we think about it.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, this catastrophic contagion is what inspired this article that I'm working on, because it's not only has, like, everybody knows about Event 201 now, everybody's discussed it in great detail, and not only do they not care, they've doubled down. This one is going to target kids. Remember Bill Gates was talking about it when Corona first hit, well, the next one's going to get their attention, and then he gibbers and squeals and does that weird, like, hand rubbing thing that he's just so, like, loathsome to look at, but it was like he was rubbing it on our faces that the next one was going to be especially devastating to whoever. And of course it's always going to be children, because they know that that's the preferred target, and it's already so much that they're trying to get everybody to inject their children with every new mRNA vaccine that they can come up with. Pfizer's got a bunch in the pipeline, Moderna rather has got a bunch in the pipeline, and it's like, okay, so just testing testing it on 8 mice and now we got to give it to all our kids. It's not enough. Like, we got to have someone that's not even tested on the 8 mice. And now it's just going to be like nonstop. But as soon as it's born, stick it full of pins and hope it rolls through. It looks like the coronavirus, the baby I'm talking about, looks like the coronavirus with all these vaccine needles sticking out of it.
Yes. You mentioned Dr. Malone a little bit earlier, and you said something that struck my interest because I'm a bit skeptical as well. Give me your thoughts on Dr. Malone, because my wife and I talk about this. She, like me, is a nerd on all of this, and we've been watching this from day one. But she's not as suspicious of him as I am. What? Give me your thoughts on Dr. Malone.
Well, I liked him starting out because he seemed like he was able to, like, he knew the science because he had been involved in inventing mRNA as a drug. But he worked with the government. And of course, once you work with the government, you're never really an ex-government employee. But as long as you take his words with a grain of salt, it was like, seemed like an interesting person. But now he's suing Peter and Ginger Breggin, who are a psychologist couple, for $25 million because they correctly characterized his discussion of Matthias Desmet's book on this mass formation psychosis, which I didn't really give Desmet's thesis too close a read when it first came out, because I assumed it was just like sort of Hannah Arendt light or whatever. And I read her book and enjoyed it. And I thought it was something along those lines, but it's actually not. It's really kind of much more insidious because it lets the ruling class off the hook and sort of blames the victim for, blames the crowds that are being hypnotized by the, I call them the narrative managers, but the media establishment for their own enslavement, basically. And the fact that he's suing this couple for, like, basically quoting his words, I mean, I don't think they even paraphrase them. I read the article, well, at least one of the articles in question, and they didn't defame him at all. They just accurately presented what he thought about or what he said about this this book. And so the fact that he's suing them, it seems like it's a malicious attempt to either splinter the health freedom community or otherwise just shut them up because he doesn't like what they're saying. It's a divide and conquer move. Again, this is what the government always does. And I shouldn't even just say the government, because that implies that the government is the one running things. It's actually the international financial cartels that are pulling the strings of the government. And then the corporations are also sort of lurking around there in the background. But it's, this is the divide and conquer is such the classic move. And the fact that Malone is doing this now is like, so I had such higher hopes for him, let's say.
Yes. And it seems so incredibly heavy-handed. I don't fully understand it. And even from the get-go, there were people that were saying that he didn't do exactly everything that he said he did in the creation of the RNA, mRNA vaccine. And look, I don't know. And I want to be wrong about all of this. I want him to be on the up and up. But I don't know, there's something tingling in my spidey senses. Let me ask you about another individual who was on my show earlier this week, and that was Dr. Andrew Huff, the person who's got the new book out about the Wuhan virus. Have you looked into him at all?
Well, I mean, I haven't looked into him personally, but the whole idea that this just accidentally happened to escape from a lab in China is way too convenient. I mean, the fact that it accidentally, quote unquote, escaped and then proceeded to follow in minute detail the scenario led out by Event 201. And then before that one, the Rockefeller Foundation scenarios for the future of technology and international development, the lockstep scenario from 2010. And basically all the other scenarios that were released in between then and Event 201. I mean, I'm not a coincidence theorist, and nobody else should be either, because it's just, if you really believe that all of these things just happen by chance and that it's just, nobody has ever like gotten together and decided behind the scenes that, hey, you know, maybe we should grab some power and steal these people's rights because, you know, they're not using them. And unfortunately, that is the case. But it's just like, you know, this did not accidentally escape from any lab. I don't think it even deliberately escaped from Wuhan, because it would be too obvious. Like, China is not stupid. They're not going to go and like get so sloppy that it's going to be the one lab that they have that's handling this particular virus. It's going to be escaped right in that city. Okay, well, if you look at some of the people who were setting the stage for this lab leak theory, one of them was Danny Shoham, who is this Israeli biowarfare specialist. And he was actually the one who, back in 2001, right after the Dark Winter simulation, which was all about a smallpox outbreak that ended up being anthrax, a bunch of letters sent to anti-war politicians and journalists with anthrax in them. But anyway, right before that, Danny Shoham comes out and says, well, Saddam Hussein's got bioweapons and anthrax. And of course, that turned out to be totally fake. But the fact that he did that, and now he's coming out again 20 something years later and saying, oh, well, you know, those Chinese, they can't handle their bioweapons. They're sloppy with their security. And oh, by the way, it's a dual purpose lab. Yes. Okay, he had the article that mentioned that he's got no proof for that statement, for one thing. And it's like, okay, so this is a US-China joint establishment here. So why is this China's problem? And it's too obvious. And the fact that the Wuhan also had this military world games in October 2019, where basically people got together from all over the world, including a hell of a lot of U.S. military figures who could have just, you know, brought that baby over from Fort Detrick, which is where I believe it came from. Other theories suggested it came from the Luger Center in Georgia, which is also possible. But I think Fort Detrick, there were a lot of like people in that area in Maryland who came up with COVID-like symptoms in sort of summer 2019. And they actually had to shut down the lab for a bit in I think mid 2019 because it had leaked into the groundwater. And speaking of people who can't handle their bioweapons, the United States and like that Fort Detrick lab especially has a terrible history of just contamination everywhere. And just it's a mess.
Well, you see it the way I see it. I'm suspect of this as well. And I wanted to have Dr. Huff on because I wanted to talk to him and everything. And you know what? I got to be honest. On a personal level, he and I got along great, but this is just hard for me to believe. One thing I did learn out of it that was very unsettling is that he goes, it's not just, you know, these labs that are overseas or are here in the U.S. He goes, a lot of this work is done on college campuses, and it's being done a lot of times by, you know, students, which I was like, wow, that's just great. And, you know, so, I mean, there are security issues involving this type of research that really need to be looked into deeply, because just being devil's advocate, okay, let's say that it was a leak. Well, what you're telling me now is that makes it even more likely that it will happen again. So I don't know.
Yeah, there's not already.
Yes. And there's not a good side of this story.
No, there are so many leaks in every single, like, and there are so many of these labs too. I mean, like the fact that there were all these ones in Ukraine, for example, has been completely memory hold. No one's talking about that anymore, but even Victoria Nuland admitted to that. And so it's like, okay, how many of these things are just like hanging out there with bioweapons just sitting around unrefrigerated to be picked up on the bottom of someone's shoe and spirited off to Liberia or wherever? It's like, it's really, really bad. And I think that at least that is deliberate, because plausible deniability, hello. Yeah, well, I just forgot to close the refrigerator door that day. Gosh darn. There was that story about the monkeys who escaped and they had like test tubes or something, and they were throwing the test tubes around. That story went away too. That was in like 2020, but it was very strange, and it seemed like it was setting up another pandemic that, I don't know, maybe that was the one that ended up being monkeypox. Everybody's forgotten about monkeypox by now, but it's like... Yeah. I don't know, the whole thing, the whole public health dictatorship is a mess, and it will end humanity's freedom as we know it. So that's pretty bad.
Yeah. And for this morning, because you mentioned Victoria Nuland. So when the Victoria Nuland admission came out back in March or whatever it was, when she said this to Rubio and Rubio didn't really follow up on it, I was like, whoa. And I thought it was a big deal. And I mentioned it to people and we're like, yeah, whatever, man. You know, it's like those Nazis that you guys are saying. I mean, all of these things that came out of all of that, and people just did not want to accept any of it. Now we find out, well, there wasn't just one, two, three. There may have been dozens. And then we find out this company, Metabiota, was involved in it. And that was Hunter Biden's, one of his investments. I mean, the whole thing is just awful. And Victoria Nuland, I know where I was going with this. This morning, Roger Waters from Pink Floyd, who amuses me, and I like Pink Floyd a lot, but this morning he put out a tweet where he's videotaping himself giving Biden a to-do list. The very first one is to pardon Julian Assange, but the very last one was to imprison Victoria Nuland.
That's something I would love to see, but I doubt it will ever happen. I mean, It's right. The whole thing over there is just so criminal, and what they're getting away with, what they're doing to the Ukrainian people, what they're doing to that country, what they're doing to Russia, what they're doing to the American people. It's a shame that this is allowed to happen. But bioweapons thing. It's like they don't have a choice of whether they want to host an extremely dangerous U.S. run bio warfare laboratory over there. I don't think anybody volunteers to have this in their country. Well, maybe a few corrupt politicians do, but the people who have to live downwind from it, for example, nobody's saying, I want to live next to that smallpox research facility. No,
that's right. That's right. Helen, tell everybody where they can find all of your work. I know you've got the Substack, helenofdestroysubstack.com, and?
Yeah, there's also velociraptor.substack.com, which is kind of an archive from my old website, which was unfortunately knocked offline by a very persistent foreign intelligence agency. But you can also follow my work on Twitter and Telegram at velociraptor23. That's VelociraptorE23. Velociraptors are not to be heard from.
Velociraptor 23 on Twitter. Helen of Destroy. Helen Byniski. Helen, thank you so much, man. This was a fun Friday conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have another hour ahead of us. So stick around. We're going to be talking about those Donald Trump NFTs. We're going to talk about the doxing. We got a lot ahead of us. Stick around.